starting with a specific third point, then in this instance, I'm going to highlight our agenda item. It was a briefing by the Department of Public Service and Administration. It's going to brief us on its annual report for 2008 and 2009 as a specific area of focus. The second briefing will be by the State Information Technology Agency on its annual report again for 2008 and 2009 and on the provision of integrated computer technology services to government departments. Of course, we also have the last item as a consideration of draft minutes. That is for the members of parliament. And then we'll be looking at our minutes of the 16th of September this year. Just to indicate again that we don't want to have a deadlock of minutes, so it's important for us to actually do that quite continuously so that we don't have stale minutes. Welcome everyone and thank you for attending. The department is led by both the Deputy Minister and the DG. The DG will be making a presentation. Okay. We're going to allocate only 3 minutes for the Minister to also do a welcome. And then thereafter, the department DG will make a presentation which is already on the screen, and then that will be followed by speaker.
Now, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I will only take 1.5 minutes, but thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me just say good morning to all the colleagues who are here and to members of the committee. We welcome the opportunity to do this presentation because, in a sense, it enables us to monitor the progress that we are making in implementation of our plan. I know the Portfolio Committee is familiar with the work of DPSA, and we also welcome the opportunity that you can have CETA here to report to you on their progress. So with that in mind, let me also express an apology from the Minister. He's at a cabinet meeting, and he's unfortunately not able to be here because of the cabinet meeting. I'd like to hand over to the DG to take us through the presentation.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, Madam Chairperson, Honourable Members. Maybe just to sort of apologise, it's an awkward venue, and I feel a bit uncomfortable to have to present my back to the Honourable Members. So I'm going to try and swivel a bit. Sorry, Honourable Member, to present my back to you. Madam Chair, I'm accompanied by members of the Department of Public Service and Administration. We have two of our Deputy Directors General, Mr. Kenny Govinden, Ms. Colette Clark. We have our Chief Director of Human Capital Management, Ms. Tuli Manzini. We have our CFO, David Mulubeti. We have members of my office, Mr. Roberts.
Oh, there's a request. The request is only introduced on this panel.
Okay. Mr. Kenny Govinden. Unfortunately, I think Colette went to the washroom. Yeah. Ms. Tuli Manzini. Mr. David Mulubeti. Mr. Robert Shaw, Mr. Tembi Sokumalo, Ms. Colette Clark. We also have from the Office of the Deputy Minister, Mr. Kuben Govinden. I think that covers the departmental members. Chairperson, thank you. Oh, sorry. We also have from the Office of the Minister, Mr. Vugani of Tembu. And Mr. Dumisani Nkwamba, thank you. I think I've exhausted them, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. The presentation is a long one, so parts of it I'll go a bit more quickly, because part of it is just to recap, to provide context for the members. That would be the vision, mission, our strategic objectives, overview of the DPSA programs, as well as the strategic outputs. We have engaged with the committee on these before. So one will spend a bit more time on the program performance for 2008-09. Apologies on the hard copy, that's a mistake. Should read 2008-09, program performance. We'll look at our HR performance and indicators. We'll look at our budget allocation and financial performance, and then we'll conclude the presentation. Just to recap there, our vision is a global leader in public service excellence, and our mission is supporting the minister in leading public service transformation, providing professional advice and support to ensure public service excellence, promoting good governance nationally on the African continent and globally. Our strategic objectives are developing and strengthening the capacity of the state through efficient, effective, and sustainable systems, strengthening the public sector through institutional reform, promoting good governance in the public sector and building an effective and caring government, developing the human resource capacity of the public sector, and pursuing strategic international partnerships to consolidate South Africa's regional international public administration agenda. Our programs, to recap very quickly, Program 1, Administration, Program 2, Human Resource Management and Development, Program 3, Management of Compensation, Program 4, Information and Technology Management, Program 5, Service Delivery Improvement, and Program 6, Governance. Moving then onto our strategic outputs for the medium term, in terms of Program 1, Administration, leading the governance and administration cluster, effective finance information technology management within the department, and security, IT security, human capital management, HR administration, OD and employee and labor relations, employee health and wellness, occupational health and safety, consistent application of performance management systems, internal auditing, risk management controls, and governance processes. Program 2, Human Resource Management and Development. The development and implementation of a human resource development strategic framework for the public service. Development and implementation of integrated systems, processes, prescripts, and guidelines to improve human resource planning. The implementation of learnerships, internship, and skills development programs that target public service and unemployed graduates and unemployed youth. The development of an HR planning strategic framework, the improvement of compliance and quality of human resource plans, the implementation of the skills database, the recruitment and retention of scarce skills, the development of transversal policies, prescripts, and interventions in the various areas of the senior management service and middle management service, strategic positioning and delivery model of the human resources function within the public service, leadership and management development for senior and middle management, the implementation of the performance management development system, and the implementation of an effective competency assessment framework. In the area of health and wellness, development and implementation of policies and implementation guides and monitoring evaluation tools aimed at promoting employee health and wellness, implementation of capacity development aimed at high-level responsiveness to the prevention and management of HIV and AIDS and other diseases to ensure occupational safety and health of public servants and the citizens they serve. In the area of diversity management, implementation of employment equity initiatives, focusing on the implementation of gender equity and equality and people with disabilities, and then ensuring transformation through diversity management interventions in the workplace. Program 3, Management of Compensation in the Area of Remuneration and Macro Benefits, Development, Implementation, and Maintenance of Policies, Practices, and Systems on Remuneration and Macro Benefits Across the Public Service, the Establishment of Suitable Remuneration Policies and Practices in the Public Service, and Facilitating the Link Between Remuneration Policies and Appropriate Performance and Career Development Practices. And then the introduction of equitable and competitive salary structures for all categories of employees. In the area of general benefits, the development, implementation, and maintenance of policies, practices, and systems on general benefits across the public service, the enhancement of the overall management of general benefits for public servants in a manner that is supportive of good human resource practices and and facilitates the effective utilization of human capacity for service delivery, and then the establishment and facilitation of access to public service human resource management information. In the area of negotiations and labor relations, determination, implementation, and maintenance of labor relations policies across the service, engagement with employee representatives to improve labor relations, facilitation of stable relations between the state as employer and labor representing public servants, provision of an appropriate negotiations framework, and negotiation with employee representatives on behalf of the state as employer in the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council and the General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council. In the area of integrated financial management, job evaluation, and the single public service, the development, implementation, and management of the HR component of the Integrated Financial Management Systems Project, that's the IFMS, the development, implementation, and maintenance of policies and systems on job evaluation and grading, and the maintenance of an effective and efficient program management office for the establishment and coordination of the single public service, including change management and communication. In the area of IT, information and technology management, e-government and ICT infrastructure, development of policies, strategies, and regulations on ICT across the service, oversight of CETA, and provision of secretariat service to the CETO Council, improvement of customer service by connecting Tusong service centers to a centralized ICT infrastructure, development of a prototype system to support communication and document management within cabinet, improvement of e-learning, reporting on ICT expenditure, and consolidation of a call center strategy to create efficiency and better service delivery. In the area of ICT governance and community development and access, development of an IT architecture blueprint in government, conducting vulnerability assessments at CETA, strengthening the GTO Council, facilitation of the development and implementation of a geographic information system around service delivery access, development of spatial maps depicting service delivery points and HR utilization, conducting assessments on accessibility of community access points. Program 5, Service Delivery Improvement in the area of Batupili, promotion of culture change in the public service, implementation of the Batupili Change Management Engagement Program across all the spheres of government, facilitation and deployment of senior managers to the coalface of service delivery, and facilitation of the sharing of best practices and lessons through publications, forums, and conferences. In the area of service delivery improvement mechanisms, engagement in supportive interventions and partnerships with other departments of government, supporting national and provincial departments to develop and implement service delivery improvement plans, in partnership with other departments, implementation of a Know Your Service Rights campaign, and the development of toolkits to guide the development of service delivery models and standards. In the area of service delivery facilitation, coordination of short-term service delivery interventions, including research to improve efficiency and effectiveness, supporting the War on Poverty campaign, and coordination of the development of a framework to improve the working environment in the public service. Also in Program 5 is the Community Development Worker Program, facilitating the smooth coordination and implementation of the CDW program, facilitating the development of appropriate curricula for the program, ensuring recruitment, training, and deployment of trained CDWs in municipalities, facilitation of the resolution of bottlenecks in service delivery and the promotion of public participation to deepen democracy and good governance. Program 6, the governance program, consists of international and African affairs, where we are involved in establishing bilateral and multilateral relations on governance and public administration, the implementation of global and continental programs and projects, the facilitation of information sharing and learning, the facilitation of the implementation of the Pan-African Ministers Program on Public Administration. In the area of planning, monitoring, and evaluation, management of systems for planning, monitoring, and evaluating the programs that enable transformation of the public sector, implementation of a system known as the Public Management Watch, the development and publication of the Human Resource Utilization Report, conducting impact assessments of various DPSA policies, supporting the presidency in the implementation of a government-wide monitoring and evaluation system. In the area of public sector anti-corruption, the establishment and implementation of strategies to fight corruption and improve ethics in the public sector, facilitation of the development and implementation of public sector anti-corruption policies, monitoring and evaluation of the national integrity framework, development indicators, managing the corruption management information system, ensuring active participation and in and compliance with bilateral, multilateral, regional and international agreements, and the provision of technical support to SADC regional anti-corruption programs and AU initiatives. The African peer review mechanism also falls within this program to facilitate and monitor implementation of the APRM program of action, provide secretarial services to the national focal point as well as the national governing council, preparation of monitoring reports for submission to the APRM Heads of States and Government Implementation Committee, and sharing of information with and participation in other APRM forums in the region and on the continent. The Center for Public Service Innovation is a government component. It was established with a different corporate form, but following the promulgation of the Public Service Amendment Act, as we know, it became a government component, reporting to the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. It provides the Minister with diverse forward-looking advice and research. It creates an enabling environment that nurtures, supports, and encourages innovation within government. Initiates, implements, and manages self-sustainable innovation projects in partnership with civil society and other relevant stakeholders, and implements special projects that are mandated by the minister from time to time. Now, moving then on to the program performance for 2008-09. During the period under review, many critical projects and programs were delivered. But where projects were not completed, then measures were put in place in order to address these challenges. Going through the programs then, human resource management and development. The 2015 Public Service HR Development Strategy was approved in December 2008. It's being implemented across all national departments. Discussions are ongoing between PALAMA and DPSA to develop the rollout for the Action Learning Program. The department is coordinating the implementation of HR planning tools in the public service. By 31st of March, the department received 62 final HR plans and 37 draft HR plans. The developed HR planning tools were piloted in two departments and tools were reviewed where necessary. The skills database project was rolled out to 20 national departments. Problems with updating personal information and extraction reports have delayed the completion of this activity. The department completed a report on the assessment of the status of skills in the public service since Resolution 7 of 2002. This gives an indication of skills utilization and availability in the public service. An ABET in Durban was held in January 2009, a draft implementation guide has been developed which will support the draft policy, and the Indaba and the guide are some of the efforts that have been made to institutionalize the ABET policy and strategic framework. The final draft of the recognition of prior learning policy document was completed and implementation has started. Funding has been received for a pilot from the EU, and the department continues to work with line departments to implement the recognition of prior learning. Meetings were held with National Treasury to establish a PERSOL functionality for managing the placement of interns, and the department is working with Higher Education South Africa and participates in University Career Open Day with universities. The HIV and AIDS workplace policy in the public service and the M&E tool guide have been reviewed. The monitoring evaluation curriculum on HIV and AIDS was developed and quality assured by PALAMA. A draft health and productivity management policy for the public service was developed, and the final draft safety, health, environment, risk, and quality policy for the public service was completed and approved by the Minister, the SHRC policy. The final draft wellness management policy for the public service was completed and approved by the Minister. The job access strategic framework was launched on the 3rd of March. The framework has been distributed via a circular as well as made available on the DPSA website. A report on the Public Service Women Management Week was finalized. Achievements on the Heads of Department's 8th Principle Action Plan are mostly on equity targets and development of policies. The representation of women in the senior management service improved slightly from 34.3 to 34.5. And the discussion on the funding of gender focal points are still in progress with all government departments. Management of compensation. The strategy to facilitate the decentralization of the policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement pillar was developed and approved. A research report on policy and funding model on post-retirement medical assistance was completed. Occupational specific dispensations were developed for social workers, emergency and medical personnel, pharmacists, medical officers, dentists, and medical dental specialists. A research report on a policy on post-retirement medical assistance was completed, and the draft policy on the funding model has also been finalized. The Senior Management Service Panel developed a first report on the categorization of departments and the grading of HODs. The report was tabled for consideration by the relevant Cabinet Committee. The proposal for a revised salary structure for Deputy Directors and Assistant Directors has been developed and will be tabled for negotiations during the 2009-10 financial year. A report on the review, update, and refinement of the EQUATE job evaluation system and job evaluation process in the public service has also been completed. A review report on revised salary structures for non-OSD occupations was drafted and submitted to the Mandate Committee. A research report on the cost-benefit analysis for the remuneration policy framework for the single public service was finalized. And the in terms of the HR module of the IFMS project, the complexity was to some extent underestimated. Progress was behind initial schedule. But work is nevertheless in progress. Program 4, Information and Technology Management. As part of e-government, the shared IT service model for the public sector was incorporated into a new IT plan for government. The prototype system to e-enable identified services is being developed and will be finalized during the 2009-10 financial year. A draft report reviewing the CETA call center was compiled, and a new generation e-government framework was developed. in the area of service delivery improvement, 55 municipalities in Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Free State were trained on the development and implementation of service delivery improvement plans, training on the Batupili Change Management Engagement Program was provided to additional municipalities with 1,000 officials trained over 274 municipalities. 10 of the 33 national departments and 22 of the 106 provincial departments had submitted their service delivery improvement plans by June 2008, and the numbers increased marginally by the end of the 2008-09 financial year. The Know Your Service Rights booklet for the social cluster was translated into all official languages and distributed widely. The Know Your Service Rights booklet on the justice cluster was developed and is under the approval process. In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the census in Kinshasa and Bakongo has been completed. That's the census of public service workers, and is 80% complete in Bandundu and Maniema. The project was also launched in the Kasai Oriental province. Africa Public Service Day was celebrated on the 23rd of June 2008. A panel made up of academics, non-government organizations, and public servants robustly debated the theme from policy to results-based implementation. And the Public Service Week was celebrated during the week of 17 to 20 June across the public service, with the Northern Cape serving as the national hub. The Batupili Learning Network was convened in November 2008 and attended by 790 participants from the three spheres of government. In 2008-09, just over 600 CDWs were recruited and trained on the CDW learnership, and over 3,000 CDWs were deployed in municipalities across the country. A detailed database on the CDWs was also developed, and the CDW National Master Plan was finalized, and the process was cascaded to the provinces. By the end of March 2009, 7 draft provincial master plans had been developed. In Program 6, Governance, the 6th Pan-African Conference of Ministers of Public Civil Administration was successfully hosted in October 2008. A draft departmental donor coordination strategy was developed, and the department actively participated in international multilateral anti-corruption and bribery forums and structures such as the OECD, the UN Convention Against Corruption, and the India-Brazil Africa Protocol. Then the minimum anti-corruption capacity guidelines were developed and captured in the public service regulations in order to enforce compliance. The APRM progress report for South Africa was presented to the APRM Forum of Heads of State, and as part of providing support to the DRC, 250,000 copies of the Anti-Corruption Code of Conduct for public officials were delivered to the DRC. 3 DRC senior government officials also visited the department on a study tour to better understand the functioning of the financial disclosure system and the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. A draft M&E framework was completed. Support was provided in various ways to the Pan-African Conference of Ministers over and above the conference, and that is the support was given to the Bureau, and through that process a draft framework for continental capacity development has been developed for the African continent. We also convened a strategic donor forum. Some of the achievements of the CPSI: technical support provided for the All Africa Innovation Awards, including facilitating the adjudication process, development of templates, documentation, certificates, and trophies. An annual innovation conference was hosted in November 2008 and attended by more than 300 delegates from 3 spheres of government. a static Unpan portal workshop was hosted in February 2009, where static country representatives were trained in the utilization of the Unpan portal and on the process of submitting and uploading documents through the CPSI. So those really account for progress within the different programs, and I'm going to now move on to the corporate aspects of performance during the period under review. On the 31st of March 2009, the department had 492 posts on its establishment, of which 385 were filled. 24 of these posts were filled by contract workers, additional to the establishment. The vacancy rate was 21.7%, but it's important to note that 99.6% of the personnel budget was spent. That would mean that the bulk of our vacancies are actually unfunded, and that what we are doing at the moment under the stewardship of the minister is reorganizing the department to ensure that our structure of our department matches our actual budget, because I think this slide actually shows, although we have that vacancy rate, we don't even have the money to fill those vacant positions. So we need to reorganize our structure and capture it on Persol to align it with the available budget. We evaluated 151 posts during the performance period. Of these, 9 posts were upgraded and 2 posts were downgraded. Of the 151 posts job evaluated, 18 people were upgraded due to their posts being upgraded. The turnover rate for the department was 18.2% as at 31st of March 2009. 69 people joined the department and 20 people left. The reasons for people leaving include death, resignations, expiry of contract, early retirement, severance package, and transfers to other departments. These are our employment equity statistics. Gives an indication of the number of males, females, African, colored, Indian, and white. As at the end of the 2008-09 financial year, 77% of the department was black, which is 3% short of the national target of 80%. Females, 39%. We saw the general public service was 34.5, so we are above that, but we are still 11% short of the national target. And in the area of disability, we are 0.44% short of the national target of 2%. So we need to improve in these areas. Performance bonuses were awarded to 171 of 384 employees for the performance period. If we look at the breakdown of our employees, salary levels 2 to 12, 51%, and 21 were SMS members. 110 were female and 67 were male. A total of that figure there refers to the performance rewards, obviously. 110 were female, 67 were male recipients of these awards, a useful statistic to look at. And a total of 2.8 million was spent on performance rewards. In terms of foreign workers, the department employs 2 foreign workers, one at the SMS level, one at middle management. Both are males with specialist skills. In the area of employee health and wellness, we have a health and wellness committee in place with representation from all branches. An SMS member has been designated responsible for the program. A comprehensive program includes raising awareness, education, activism on international and national pandemics at individual and collective level. And monitoring of the program occurs with reporting to the department. In the area of labor relations, 15 people lodged grievances, 25 people participated in strike action, 1 person was suspended, and 11 people were disciplined for misconduct during this period. During the performance period, 179 employees received training, and that gives the number of males and females, and employee with disability who were beneficiaries of development intervention. Our audit report for 2008-09, unqualified audit, even cleaner than the previous year, but other matters that were noted are of concern. I won't offer excuses, but non-compliance with applicable legislation. The first one is quite serious in the sense that we aren't complying with our own prescript there as the DPSA. We didn't have an updated approved strategic human resource plan for 2008-09. We subsequently rectified that, but nonetheless, we're not proud of that other matter. And even the other one, where we hadn't finalized or approved our risk assessment and fraud prevention plan for the year under review. In terms of the financial statements, this just gives the final appropriation for the two financial years, 2007-08 and 2008-09. It shows an improvement in our expenditure performance with very small variances in both years, but 2.1% variance in the year under review, 2008-09. So we didn't spend 2.1% of our budget. This just gives the economic classifications split in terms of goods and services, capital assets, transfers, and subsidies and compensation. So goods and services and compensation form the bulk. Program expenditure, this just gives an indication. Our expenditure was very much spot on, as we saw, only a 2.1% variance, and this just gives an indication in the various programs of the expenditure pattern. The main variance actually was the PCETA. The PCETA still functions within our budgetary system. We currently are finalizing a memorandum of understanding, and ultimately from next financial year our intention is to actually transfer the funds. But this PCETA program sits within HRM&D, so I'm just going back to that slide because that's where the biggest variance was, but it's actually because of the PCETA which was unable to spend its allocation. And then there was just a small variance on the compensation budget, which I mentioned earlier. The main cost drivers there, compensation pillar, the policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement, which is in the process of being decentralized, with a bit of resistance from some of the provinces to that decentralization. When we began the implementation of the project, there was strong pressure from the National Treasury for us to decentralize immediately, but we said we would have to phase in the decentralization, and there are challenges around that, but it is a big cost driver during the performance period under review. Transport and subsistence, CETA services, advertising, property lease. In conclusion, Chairperson, the annual report does indicate our major achievements for the 2008-09 financial year. We do work hard as a department to ensure that we make optimal use of our resources, and we do have a program management office in place, which on a quarterly basis monitors the performance of our programs across the department. Thank you very much. Chairperson, honourable members, Deputy Minister, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chief. I said that you. I'd like to thank the presentation by the department and the whole group who followed very well. Of course, they are very keen and very impressive issues that came up that we really want to zoom into and discuss about. So, in order for me not to empty, maybe let me allow the members. These are issues I want to raise. In fact, at first I thought you were going to be problematic. From A, 1, 2, but I think it will take a lot of time, but it will be good for us to focus the program, which will let me allow the members to just ask what they pick up, so that you are, and then the department will take the question, and then we will allow them to answer. Any questions from the members? Honorable Frank Saturday, Honorable Day, and Honorable William, in that order.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask two questions. On page 18, slide 35, it stated that the research report on the cost-benefit analysis for the remuneration policy framework for the single public service has been finalized. So I would like to know, what does that remuneration policy framework entail? And is the information available to us somewhere? And then my second question, page 25, it's slide 50, in connection with the performance reward, you say that performance bonuses were awarded to 171 of the employees. I would like to know, what is the criteria? The criteria for receiving such a bonus. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also should just say thank you for the report, but quite frankly, I think there's a lot of issues that I just work on paper. On page 14, my first question related to that. So you are mentioning that there are projects that were not completed as planned, measures that have been put in place to address the challenges. I'd like to know, what are these measures that were put in place? What have done about them? How far are they? Is there any progress? Is there any challenges that are related to that? On page 16, in particular, in specified to be specific, in fact, in relation to the human resource development, if I can just, because I didn't pick it up in what we've gone through with the report. Human resource development implementation of the workplace skills plan, the skills audit, etc. There's been a lot of problems, especially in relation to municipalities. I would have thought that you could have been given details of that in terms of what progress has been made in terms to ensure that the skills plans, audits, etc. are being implemented correctly, and what indication is there that there are these municipalities that are implementing them. If you go to page slide 37, slide 37 has figures there in terms of training that was given to the people change management engagement program. Figures are beautiful. It was really well done. But what is the effectiveness of such a program? Because we know that at some stage these budgetary principles were beefed up with some preambles because there were problems of actually seeing that in service delivery, there was a lot of complaints from both the public and even officials themselves that the principles are not being applied correctly. And with that, the problem is that it sounds like from the department side, you are spreading the gospel, but the gospel is not succeeding. Now, what are the issues around that? But what is happening? Because there's a lot of funding also at some stage where officials were sent out to all provinces to actually go and ensure that this is being implemented in departments. But you still encounter problems where you find that some people don't even know this preamble to the budgetary principles, or there's no change at all in terms of service delivery. A good example is in hospitals, pharmacies, etc. Page 20, slide 39, concerning the CDW. There seems to be a problem with CDWs where they don't know where they belong. Now, I see that it's been indicated that CDWs belong to the municipalities. But a lot of CDWs still operate not knowing if they belong to the in provinces, the premier's offices, or if they belong to the municipality. And you find that the organization itself still has a problem of actually allocating these CDWs to do their work. So they float around, go to work when they feel like going to work. They operate as silos. I'd like to have more detail on that as to their program and who do they belong to, who leads them, which department is in charge of them. CDWs are also promised allowances, for example, in terms of cars and so on, which does bring me to the question as to whether do they have job descriptions with people or what. Slide 42, the DRC issue. It's fine, senior government officials are sent there. But my question is, when they came back, what have they done to ensure that there's better improved understanding within the country of what they have done, and which departments did they exactly go to make known this national anti-corruption hotline, and how well is it understood at the correct level? And also, in terms of the annual innovation conference which was hosted, it's fine, it's sure that there are figures which also just says work was done, but you know, the end result in terms of slide 43, bullet point 2. The conference was hosted there, but what benefit is it to us as a country? And what has been done to make sure that that was a success? Under human resource management, we know that there's been several vacancies, CEOs, COOs, constant acting people in departments. What's the problem of filling these positions? And if they are filled, can I get an indication as to how the posts were advertised? And if not, what is the problem? In terms of your figures, if you look at your job evaluation of 151 post jobs evaluated on slide 46, only 9 posts were upgraded and 2 posts were downgraded. If you compare that figure to the total figure of 151, is that not pretty low? It should give an indication that there's a problem there. Yes, 18 people were upgraded, but vis-à-vis the figure of 151, there's still, I think, I wouldn't even call it an achievement. There's a problem there in terms of the figure. Shouldn't be a lot closer to the 151. If it can't be, why not? The performance appraisals, especially local government. Slide 50. We're talking about the performance reward. How well is this being cascaded into provinces as a way of motivating even staff in those departments? And I would like to actually know about the performance appraisal model or policies related to that, as to how well are they being implemented in government. Because at some stage I think there was a problem to an extent that when it came to employment equity report, you'd find that there'd be a problem in reporting because they don't actually implement the performance appraisal policy or model in a particular municipality, for example. Without really going into much of the report as well, because there's a lot more questions that I honestly do have. Generally, the report does tell you what you have done, but it doesn't indicate your monitoring and evaluation strategies that are in place. And if there are any in place, how do you institute them? How do you instill them? How do you go to this department and ensure that what you have gone through to give as information, because I get the impression it's almost as if you just deliver the information and you leave. But when do you actually go and monitor to see that the implementation processes are still intact? Thank you, Chef. I'll stop at that for now.
Thank you. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of the questions that I haven't covered, but I've got some questions just following up on the CDWs. Fundamentally, there needs to be some real serious intervention here due to the fact that CDWs play a vital role when it comes to government on the ground. And like the previous speaker said, they don't know who to report to, but more importantly, they're not being resourced. And I'm not just talking about car allowances and things. They're not being given simple stuff like printed paper when they have to print reports. On the same line, when CDWs take members of the community to Tucson centres, they run into serious problems because of the non-functioning of Tucson centres across the board. So that there also needs to be some more mentioning of Tucson centres. There's nothing about Tucson centres. And it's all very well to have a booklet that explains people's rights, service delivery rights, but to implement these rights, they can do so at Tucson centres. But if the Tucson centres are not operating correctly, or are not giving the full service, for instance, you need to have an ID book from Home Affairs before you can get a grant from SASA, these things aren't working. There's no integration of those services. So I think that you need to put some emphasis on Tucson centres. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On slide 37, the program 5 on LDI, they say 55 municipalities in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Free State were trained on the development of implementation service delivery. And then over 274 municipalities, they have spread over 274 municipalities. My question is why there is so much dissatisfaction regarding service delivery if training has been conducted on over 274 of the 283 municipalities? What are the core areas of this training program? Has monitoring and evaluation been done on them to determine their efficiency? And then also, which municipalities are these? Have there been no service delivery contest in these municipalities? If so, what necessities such as protests when the SADPF were in place? Because also Mpumalanga is part of this training, but there are a lot of protests in Mpumalanga and they are aware. So we want to check the monitoring and evaluation of these trainings. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think those are questions that are actually possible. I don't believe we're going to get to the end. I'm definitely not going to actually ask about other areas that I think they need to be looking at. think Wadia to respond to your question. For example, if you remember in the past discussions with the group, we were talking a lot about the issue of anti-corruption practice, and I would like to share a brief in relation with the IPSA that you mentioned, Dr. Kravendich, how then does it work? How are they, you know, to amplify the arrangements in this anti-corruption practice? Other issues are the Indaba, that's what the book has, yes? The Indaba guys, I think we'd love to have voice in the community to go through it. And I would like to know how does it relate to the future of the project. I don't know, we don't know. We haven't seen the guys, so we do not know what are the plans, but it's really interesting if it's part of the board. Our thinking should be the majority of people who are in the territory of outside government and see the peace of focusing on government, so whatever arrangements. There's maybe details of some people that are not here, but we would follow up on this issue. The other issue, you know, we talked about the gender focal point, and to the best of our knowledge, you know, the issue of gender focal point is one of the areas that makes the gender focal point of the floor completely. You know, like most of the areas department are not talking about that area, we change people every day. Sometimes we send this one, you know, they send even people who are not well versed about the program of the department to go to the meeting and only interchange the program of the department because the intention was to make green sense. So at the end of the day, people who coordinate the gender program end up, you know, not having the actual information, like start doing the job to be true themselves. So I realized that there has been some work done there, and I'm really interested to really find out what it was only around funding. But what about the consistency? You know, is there a job description around that work? That inconsistency and not sending anybody from a tripart to anybody has been a problem in the past. Just to see whether is it now sort of looked into while we're pumping funding, it should be on relevant program work. It's a serious problem for the general in the government and within the country. The honourable members have already raised the issue of, you know, whether this to the two centers. I'm sure we really need to have a meeting with the department around these issues, and we'd have to link that to the CDW, as they already mentioned. I won't get into details, but surely we need to around the issues. And we will afterwards discuss and have a report ready to and you know, we will know the department on this list. Many issues are raised. Can I just say that, you know, issues of vacancy is becoming embarrassing in the Department of Public Safety, they're not also closing up, you know, the vacancies. I can give you an example of a CFO issue that was raised in the MCOP. So maybe to just look into that and, you know, ready ourselves as a leading department in this area to ensure that we're actually doing our best. So in particular, you know, that issue of the CFO was raised in an embarrassing way. How then to really move around and close that. I attended a conference of public safety, one of our stakeholders, public safety innovation, CSP, the Center for Public Safety Innovation. And I realized that some of the things we can inject some innovation around other areas. And one issue that we're talking about is disability programs, which can assist us in terms of the lack that we have country interchange, maybe at least. But I think those ideas are going to be discussing here now. They can definitely impact in terms of making a difference along the area of our disabilities. We have accepted that we didn't do well, but we need to look forward to it. So I'm actually relating it to what we have as a department, the institution is like, they talked about it makes sense in terms of why don't we pull in aspects and we can make it speed up, you know, what's already a standard as it is for the government, the area of disability. Yeah, I think basically that the deceptive is that if you get some time, we'd like to hear if we're addressing the issues of the African peers, who my time is not going to go to. came off my head. I was looking into it and I was trying to build upon that. I know it's a lot, but that's a discussion for the day. Over to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. There's a lot of questions. I'll run through them, and I would also request the Deputy Minister to engage around the CDWs because he's been intimately involved. But then other of the managers here will also refer some of the questions to them. I'm not sure in terms of the protocol, maybe the Deputy Minister should begin with the CDWs if that's in order.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Suka. I just want to check whether under which directorate does the CDWs fall, so that I would want to see a situation whereby the directorate responds directly, and so because funds, surely if there are any funds which follows the function to that particular directorate, would have to account for that, and this is what we want to hear. Then if there are any gaps, surely the Deputy Minister might come in, because if there is a directorate, there is a person, a one body that is dealing with this matter, surely this is the time for that, to account on what we have spent, not unless otherwise. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Suka. Actually, welcome again to this committee. Yeah, I think when the minister answered, maybe we'll take on board the issue.
Thank you very much. But let me just clarify that there is a directive that's involved on CDW that falls under the Service Delivery Improvement unit of the department. But the reason why the matter has been referred to me is I've actually been very directly involved in oversighting the CDW program in the country and through this directorate. Perhaps the first thing to explain so that members understand very clearly, the CDW together with the two song centers are two sort of service delivery intervention mechanisms that originated in the DPSA. It was intended, particularly the CDWs, be a kind of mechanism that would straddle across the governmental sphere so that we can close the gap between the disadvantaged and poorest or the poor and government services. The implementation of the program resides with COGTA. At the national level, there are two departments in terms of the cabinet memorandum that have the responsibility to coordinate nationally the program. It is the DPSA and COGTA. But the direct implementation responsibility for the program resides with COGTA. Now, what we have been doing on CDW is to try and get this program to the point where we can make a fairly clear recommendation as to which of the departments should coordinate the implementation of the program. And the program has suffered from this difficulty in that the program falls between the stools, between DPSA and COPTA. And a lot of work has been done by the departments to formulate guidelines to guide the implementation of the program, because DPSA sees it as its responsibility to incubate this program. So guidelines have been formulated to guide the implementation of the program, which the departments and the various provinces have been implementing using the guidelines. But what we found is that because there are no policies on CDW, the project has been implemented with a great degree of variety and variance in each of the provinces. And we found a number of problems relating to this program. One, this question of location that you mentioned. In some provinces, the CDWs are located at the level... Well, let's first start by saying, because it's an intergovernmental program and an inter-sphere program, in other words, it serves across three spheres,
It's a program which originates nationally. It then gets resolved or devolves to the provinces, and the provincial governments are expected to take the program and implement it and coordinate it. And it's usually COPTA that's actually doing it. And but the base of activity of the CDWs are in municipalities. And they're primarily based in the ward community, in the ward of community. So you have this very strange and very difficult arrangement that the provinces are responsible for implementing the program. The CDWs have to work in communities at the community level in wards. And then there's the question of oversight and management and governance of the CDWs that constitutes a serious problem. So consequently, you will hear a lot of the officials in the various departments tell you that they don't know what the CDWs are doing, there's no system of reporting, no system of monitoring, and so on and so forth. So what happens is that in some provinces, the CDWs are based in the speaker's office because they've seen it as a political intervention. In others, it's based in the mayor's office, and in some cases, the reporting goes directly to the managers, the municipal managers in local municipalities. And what we've found is that in all of these arrangements, there is no dedicated governance structure, no dedicated responsibility structure, and consequently the officials who have been entrusted with these responsibilities are doing this as one of 10 or 20 other functions. Now, to complicate matters, the entire budget for CDWs come from COPTA, and the government is spending something like over 600 million rands per annum on this program, 90% of which is going for salaries, with roughly about 110% being spent on operational expenses. So consequently, you'll find that the project is very under-resourced. CDWs at best get their allowances, their public service of a special kind. They have no transport, no cell phone allowances. Some have laptops, most of them don't. And there is absolutely no support from government on these matters. And because there is no funding, dedicated funding from the National Treasury, COPTA finds the money to keep this program going. Now, the DPSA's work has been directed in the period that we've been working on this thing now, has been directed at trying to formulate a clear policy on this matter so we can get consistency of implementation across the province. So the issue that we are looking at is that we want to resolve the funding question, resolve the question of consistency in implementation, resolve the question of location, and in particular resolve the question of the activities that CDW must perform. Because it's in this area there is a great amount of confusion that happens and conflict. You find CDWs in some areas competing with councils fighting with CDWs. What makes it even more complicated is that some of the CDWs occupy positions in political branches and they use their political authorities to interfere with their work. So we're trying to establish a policy that would speak to all of these matters and straighten things out. And our work has taken us into all the provinces. We've now conducted 6 provincial summits, which have been beefed up by a number of consultations with stakeholders. We are about to finish the rest of the provinces, and we have been developing thus far a set of interim policy options that are emerging on all of these matters that I've spoken to. We are hoping that by December we will have a firm policy in place, which we will then sign off from all the stakeholders and take into the parliamentary and cabinet process. And once we are with that, then we are quite certain that the parliamentary committees will play a decisive role in shaping that policy. But we do think that it is necessary, Madam Chair, for us to give a proper and more comprehensive briefing on this matter to the portfolio committee. So we will also request that at some stage we set aside some time to deal with that more comprehensively, because it's quite an important issue.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll run through, as I indicated. I'll indicate the managers who will respond on the question of remuneration policy framework. Kenny Governor will respond to that. On the criteria for performance rewards, Colette leads the branch which regulates this across the public service, but it's also a question relating internally. So when Thuli engages with some of the questions, she'll also engage there. There was a question on the measures put in place to complete projects. Now, I think that we would need to sort of look at some of the specific projects, but perhaps just to explain that in the concluding slide, it indicates that we've got a program management office that we've established in the DPSA to help us track progress in the implementation of projects. So what we do when we monitor, we look for the reasons why a project is not being implemented. It could be an issue of the project must be implemented in partnership with another department or with CETA, so there might be a blockage there that one would have to unblock. It could be that a particular project manager is not delivering on a project, then we might take corrective measures there, or we might move the project to another section of the department. It could be a problem of funding, and then we would have to ensure that the project is adequately resourced. It could be a problem of overcommitment on our side in terms of coming up with an operational plan which is simply too big to implement all of them. So hopefully that helps with understanding what that point was about. There was a question on human resource development, but it was pitched specifically at problems in relation to municipalities. I think Colette will, when she makes her responses, talk to the HRD issues, but strictly speaking, we don't really have a mandate over municipalities. That's the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. But in the spirit of building an integrated public service, we have begun to work together with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in a number of areas. But in the area of human resource development, that department does have a number of interventions. But as has been correctly, the question has been quite appropriately asked, well, we do have this Bhatupili Change Management Engagement Program, which is really about trying to sensitize municipalities to Bhatupili, because again, strictly speaking, in terms of the legal framework, the Bhatupili White Paper is applicable to the public service, which is national and provincial government. But I think in the spirit of building an integrated public service, we have developed a specific program of training, which is pitched at the level of trying to build internal capacity, training of trainers around Bhatupili principles. It's appropriate to say, but what is the impact? And two, well, three of the honorable members have actually asked that in relation to the protests, problems in service delivery and so on. We are currently conducting an impact assessment of that particular training program where we did engage with municipalities. On the question relating to the DRC, maybe just to clarify, the officials that were trained were actually DRC officials. So we were trying to give support to the head of the Department of Public Service in the DRC, and the head of a component which is dealing with anti-corruption. The focus of that visit for those managers was exposing them to some of our anti-corruption processes, including the national hotline, which is hosted by the Public Service Commission. But they were also interested in decentralized public administration, because their constitution requires them now from a highly centralized public administration system to decentralize public administration, and in South Africa it is decentralized. So we did have visits to municipalities, provinces, as well as the presidency, the cabinet office, and so on, just to give them exposure to some of the issues that they were interested in. Obviously, the Public Service Commission as well. I think it's always very important to ask ourselves what we achieve through some of the conferences that we host, and the question was in particularly directed to the CPSI's Innovation Awards conference. Perhaps what the bullet doesn't explain adequately is that a number of awards were made at that conference. It is a global practice. The United Nations has innovation awards, and South Africa has won various categories in the past. At the level of the continent as well, the Public Service and Administration Ministers Conference also has awards, and the African Association of Public Administration and Management also has awards. I think the aim of these is to really encourage innovation. But I think the real challenge in terms of the question is, once we identify the excellent innovations and give them awards, what do we then do to internalize them and spread them within the public service? And I think that's where we probably need to improve. I think that is an area of focus of the CPSI. But I think increasingly we need to see that innovations that are showcased in these conferences are institutionalized within the public service, because they often do deal with reducing red tape while maintaining controls, for example. And I think those kinds of projects really need to be encouraged and spread throughout the public service. The issue of vacancies was raised by two of the members. I'm going to ask Colette also to comment on that. But I think in relation to the department, I think one of the reasons we put the slides like that is to indicate that a lot of our problems is with what we have on the PERSAL system. In our case, we don't have money to fill those vacancies, but it means we have a structure on which is captured on PERSAL, which does not match our resources, our budgets. So the vacancies are not real vacancies, actually. They posts which are vacant, but which we have no funding for. Now, it is caused by weaknesses in management. I definitely would acknowledge that. Because one of the things that we tend to do is, when we create new posts, we don't abolish other posts which we are not intending to fill, or we don't have the budget to fill those. And that is really the essence of the problem of the so-called high vacancy rate in the public service, is that a lot of it is poor HR management and administration. Of course, there are significant vacancies in some departments, but there are several, like ours, that actually don't have the budget to fill some of those posts on the establishment. Sometimes it might be a management decision not to abolish a post because we hope to get money in the future from Treasury. But I just thought it would be important to emphasize that. I think Tuli will explain around the job evaluation exactly what that entailed, just to clarify the questions that were raised with that. And the performance rewards was also asked. There were two members who asked that question, and I think Colette will input and Tuli will add. I think in terms of monitoring and evaluation, very important question, what do we do as the department? Well, we do have a number of systems which are emerging and functional. For example, the Public Management Watch we produce on a quarterly basis, where we look at key human resource management indicators. And we also incorporate Treasury information from National Treasury on expenditure, as well as information from the Auditor General's report. So we get a picture which is not purely human resource management, but to some extent financial management as well. And we do turn out quarterly reports, and perhaps at some point, if time is available, we could also come and share that one of the quarterly reports with the committee, just to give a clearer indication. But we are also in the process of establishing a compliance monitoring system, which would allow us to look at compliance on a regular basis as well, and to improve our capacity to report both to Parliament and to the Executive on compliance with the public service prescripts. So that is a system which is currently under development. We do conduct numerous evaluations in all the programs. So for example, when Kenny talks about the remuneration policy framework, that was developed on top of a personnel expenditure review, which was an evaluation of personnel expenditure in the public service. So there are several evaluations which we do in all our programs on an ongoing basis, which inform policy shifts or policy refinement. Questions about the Tusong centers, and I think the committee has correctly focused their attention on these centers. Again, the Tusong centers are currently under the stewardship of GCIS. An evaluation has been concluded, and there are discussions about whether that will continue to be the appropriate location for the Tusong centers. But perhaps what we should have mentioned in our presentation is where we did make a major contribution was through facilitating connectivity at 42 of the Tusong centers. Together with CETA, we set up a team, and we were able to connect 42 of those Tusong centers. In terms of the Honorable Maluleke's questions, the Batupili Change Management Engagement Program, to some extent I've engaged with that question, but we also trained on service delivery improvement plans. Now again, strictly speaking, the white paper on Batupili is where the service delivery improvement plans are derived from, and that again focuses on national and provincial government. But in the interest of integrated governance, integrated public service, the development of a single public service, which can't only be about the legislation, we have advocated for the development of service delivery improvement plans across all the spheres of government. So there's been two areas where we've done training. They're obviously intimately related, because service delivery improvement plans are part of the Batupili framework, as I've indicated. We have evaluated the service delivery improvement plans at some point across the spheres. But as I've indicated on the Batupili Change Management Engagement Program, we're currently looking at an impact assessment to see whether we have actually made a difference there. But I think one isn't trying to pass a buck, as it were, but our mandate with respect to local government is something which is evolving at the moment. And of course, our major partners there are the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, as well as SALGA. On the anti-corruption strategy, the IPSA work is more at the level of knowledge sharing. Internationally, I think the areas where we've been engaged in more substantive work is with the OECD Anti-Bribery Convention, with the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, and at the level of the AU through the National Anti-Corruption Bodies Conference and Bureau, which currently we chair. Now, at all these levels, there are specific conventions, and South Africa has acceded to these conventions, and the process at the moment is very much at the level of self-assessment. So frameworks are provided to countries which then need to undertake a self-assessment to determine the extent to which they are complying with various provisions of these conventions. There is a big conference of the state parties to the UN Convention, which is taking place next month in Qatar, where there will be a more comprehensive report on the whole question of self-evaluations and what happens with countries' involvement beyond acceding to the convention. I think on the abet, as well as its relationship, if at all, to the PCETA, Colette will deal with that, as well as the gender focal points. I have made some comments on vacancies. I think Colette will add. On the APRM, where we are at the moment is we obviously are focusing on implementation of the program of action. The National Governing Council has met several times this year. We would need by December to produce a report which would be tabled at the Heads of State Summit. The Heads of State Summit happens twice a year, and at the summit the APRM forum meets as well. Those countries, the heads of states of those countries that have acceded to the APRM mechanism. And the January meetings are when the annual reports are tabled, and then the mid-year meetings are where evaluations or reviews of particular countries in terms of the APRM are discussed by the heads of state. So I think we would be better placed to engage at the level of implementation once we've finalized our report. But there is a high level of alignment between the government program of action and the APRM program of action in order to avoid duplication. But the APRM program of action does contain a number of elements not in the government program of action because of the partnership with civil society. So there's joint implementation, and there's also programs which civil society takes responsibility for. So Chairperson, I'd like to ask Kenny and then Colette and then Tuli to engage. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, DG, and good morning to members and the Chair. On the question around the remuneration policy for the single public service, just to indicate that was part of a comprehensive program as part of the single public service. One of the things we had to look at was to develop a strategy to align the salaries and conditions of service between the three tiers of government. So to do that, we conducted a comprehensive review of salaries and conditions of service across the three spheres of government. We looked at basic salary, we looked at all benefits, your pensions, medical aid, allowances, bonuses, performance assessments, the entire thing that's paid out between the three spheres of government. The research also gave us a number of options, together with the financial implications with regard to the alignment across the three spheres. We've taken all of that information at DPSA and consolidated it into what we call a remuneration policy for the single public service, where we propose which is the best way to align the conditions of service across the three spheres of government. And we came up with the most cost-effective, financially viable way of doing that. That particular document, both the review and the remuneration policy, was submitted to Cabinet during the course of last year, late last year, early this year. And it is part of the single public service work. With the single public service work being withdrawn from Parliament in July of last year, all of that information is now being dealt with outside between National Treasury and ourselves to deal with the financial implications around implementation, and then there's a political process to deal with the legislation itself going forward. So the information is available, and we need to discuss it internally, and I'm sure it can be made available.
Thank you. Good morning to the honourable members. The DG had responded to the issue of municipalities
currently in terms of human resources norms and standards, the DPSA only has jurisdiction over the 146 departments that are covered by the Public Service Act. We do not have any jurisdiction over municipalities with regards to any determinations around the skills development plans as well as the performance reward system. But that being said, that is the competency of cooperative governance as well as SALGA. That being said, we do have a working relationship with cooperative governance. We have a quarterly steering committee of all the different departments at the national level and representatives from the provinces, where any trends, norms, and standards with regards to human resources management and development are discussed. Cooperative governance does report to the GMA cluster insofar as they are implementing aspects of skills development as well as issues of vacancies, you know, at the national level for the areas of competencies that they cover, which are municipalities. To deal with the generic aspects of the performance management system, which DPSA as a department, one of the 146 departments, are also expected to comply, the performance management system has got three different tiers, one for head of department, one for the senior management service, and then for the levels 1 to 12, that is decentralized. It is not a uniform system because the contextual factors differ from sector to sector and they differ from province to province, so each of those differs come up with their own performance management system. There are generic guidelines and generic principles that have to be followed. But last year, Cabinet took a decision and then requested us to review the actual performance management system for government, in that we need to come up with a system that links performance, individual performance management, with organizational performance management. We are currently busy with a review process. We'll be coming up with a draft strategic framework for performance management, meaning that the departments and the sectors who come up with their own performance management systems would have to align it with the principles that are in the new strategic framework, which is work in progress at this particular point in time. But speaking to the system as it pertains presently, the scoring system for the awarding of performance bonuses in the current system is basically on a 5-point scale, which translates to anybody that scores an average of what we would rate 150 upwards within qualify for a category A or category B if they're below a salary level 13, which means that they're not a senior manager. They have got two categories in terms of bonuses. But for the senior management service, we just have one category of performance bonuses that can be awarded. But the rating scale is also the same, above 130. And above 130 would mean that if you're performing 30% and above of what you were expected to perform, you would then start qualifying for a performance bonus. The issue of the filling of vacancies, there are contextual factors with regards to that as well, in the sense that departments, we work within a decentralized human resources management framework where the decision for recruitment and filling of posts is vested with the HOD and the relevant execution authority of that particular line department. But the two major issues with regards to the filling of posts that are constrained are the ongoing restructuring within departments, number one, and number two, the funding and the movement of funding within departments. And those are normally quoted as the reasons, and also the reasons explained by the DG, which are not peculiar to the DPSA, but those are the generic reasons in relation to the non-abolishment of posts where there is no funding that is available for those particular posts. In relation to the endeavor for ABET, we're working closely with the Department of Education. The legal mandate nationally for ABET is vested with the National Education Department. In terms of the public service HRD strategy, the strategic framework under the capacity building initiatives, one of them is that all line departments must implement the ABET policy as part of the workplace learning. The RPL policy framework is part of the vehicle for the implementation of the ABET policy. Our jurisdiction is only for public servants in terms of implementation of the ABET policy. The Department of Education is for anybody that is outside the public service in terms of the legal mandate for the implementation of that. So they hold a national scorecard for the HRD strategy. It was the Department of Education. But for the public service, we then focus on just public service in relation to ABET. For the workplace learning, in terms of the recognition of prior learning, the focus is on numeracy and literacy up to the ABET level 4. And that we're working. The PCSA is the quality assurer, but we are the implementers in terms of the policy from the quality assurer. And what the quality assurer does is come up with a certificate and a qualification value for the particular sector. And that is the role. But the guidelines in terms of what has come out of that particular endeavor would be made available to the House. In relation to the gender focal points, last year the Cabinet endorsed the strategic framework for gender inequality for women within the public service. We would make that strategic framework also available because all aspects of the work of the gender focal points, as well as their job descriptions and what needs to happen in terms of uniform programs of implementation, are included in that particular framework. The generic format for the job description is included in the public service framework, but what has to go into that particular generic format are what is contained in the strategic framework for gender mainstreaming. And we can share with you and the reports that have emanated from there. But just to share with you in terms of the issue of the implementation of the Human Resources Development Strategic Framework, there are quite a number of things that are coming out for us from a monitoring and evaluating perspective, in that one of the reports that is available now is the first institutional readiness assessment report, where there were 10 dimensions that each of the departments had to measure whether they were ready to implement certain programs of all the generic aspects of human resources within their particular department. Where they've indicated that they're falling short, as the DPSA, we have responded individually to each of those departments, identifying their weaknesses and suggesting to them the interventions that they need to be putting in place in terms of rectification for the year going forward with regards to all aspects of human resources development. And that is linked to the provincial departments and national departments skills development plans for human resources. And that, you know, ideally is the way in which we need to be assessing their capacity to be able to implement human resources development plans. Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you, DG, honorable members. Colette has touched mainly on the issue of the merit bonus, and mine is just to add that, to say that for a merit bonus, you get it, it's for people who are high performers, because there's a tendency of people thinking that they deserve that, but you actually get paid for doing the work that you do every month. So it means you should be doing more than that for you to qualify for that. The issue of slide 46 on job evaluation, that is 151 that have been evaluated and 2 downgraded and 9 upgraded. The system is like the system that we use in the in DPSA is called the Equate to do job evaluation. So what this slide simply means is that out of the 151 that we evaluated, 9 we upgraded, 2 downgraded, and it means 140 remain the same. Because when you do job evaluations, either there's an upgrade, downgrade, or it will remain at the same level. So the 140, if these numbers don't correlate, the 2 and the 9, it means the 140 that is the difference from those numbers are those that remained or were confirmed at the same level.
Thanks, Chair. I think we've tried our best to the question.
Okay. Just if I take honorable I just need to follow up on the issue that you raised of the institutional readiness assessment report. Where does it precise? Is it done by the department? Okay, we'll talk about the issue of policy commission sometime, but let me find the answer first.
As part of the service delivery model for all the strategic framework, every single department has to do an institutional readiness assessment so that if we know that they're not implementing the generic plan that we've given in the particular strategic framework, we know what the constraints are. So the department does it themselves, they're measuring the 10 dimensions in terms of their funding, the skills of the staff that are carrying out the function, and quite a number of environmental factors that are there. It's on a scale of 1 to 10, so they do their own assessment and they bring it to our attention. But we respond to them as advocacy to indicate, if you're having a problem in this particular area, we're advising this is the way you can resolve it, so that you can actually implement what we're suggesting as the programs that need to be in place legally for each of the strategic frameworks.
Chairperson, I'm happy with the answer, but I think we would need then to request the department that at some stage a platform be created for us to be able to actually have detailed reporting in terms of what progresses have been made in relation to the CDW, for example, to see where we are, so that we understand where exactly are we and what needs to be improved as soon as possible, because I think it will also be in a way of improving our financial matters in relation to their remuneration. And I'd also like to hear in detail if a platform could also be created in terms of the HRM and the integrated IT system, as to what progress has been made in relation to that, because there sounds to be a lot of problems in relation to the organizational structure perhaps in vis-a-vis the cell system that is being used, for example. We know that there are various programs or systems that are also in place, but they don't seem to be effective. But there's a lot of money being spent in relation to that. And also perhaps to add the very institutional readiness assessment report, if you could hear more about that in another meeting. And I also think that we need to have more on issues of employment equity.
Mm-hmm.
What is the department doing in relation to meeting their requirements in relation to the employment equity? And one of the issues that was raised is in relation to labor relations. We know that one of the problems, big problems that we have, where a lot of money is spent, it's in cases that are where departments are involved in on matters of CCMA and so on. I think we also need a detailed report in relation to that as to what are the challenges that are particularly facing the public service and administration department. And lastly, Chairperson, I think next time we also need to get a detailed report in terms of the financial department, treasury department, as to how expenditure is spread out, and how that is also in return monitored and evaluated to ensure proper accountability. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm doing several things.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also satisfied with the question of the CDW when the minister was explaining the background moving forward to a document that will be released very soon. Because I would have liked also to see maybe too much in terms of the directory, the breakdown from province to province, how they spent that plus 600 million rand, so that we don't make an assumption where provinces or municipalities spend the money that they don't spend, given the fact that it's not their core business as they would see, because they are facing other key pressures in their various localities. So I'm saying one would have loved to see that kind of a situation, so that we can see all municipalities are treated equally in terms of this program, the CDW. It's a very important matter, but I think we would want to follow it closely. On the issue of the Batopile principles and its program, I think, Chairperson, where I see a gap is the monitoring of that the Batopile principles in the implementation. that was it cut across departments, the back-to-back. So I'm saying that maybe where we're lacking, because if we're a bit upfront on the matter, surely some of the issues or the deficiencies would not have been encountered at this point in time. Please explain to me, Chair, my last point, on page 158 on the document, in relation to the slides. I came late, but I'm trying to catch up very quickly. On your disabilities, on page there's a graph that shows your movement. There are many zeros, but in the slides you are talking of 1.6%, that you are almost there. Can you translate to me this document that is having zero in your target vis-a-vis your slides on page 158, surround table 6.5, equally to 6.6, how do they relate to one another, this document and the slides? Because my fear would be that we'll move with the slides and leave out what is an executive summary of what is taking place in the main document. And I see that in your expenditure, you are almost there on target, in terms of your target. You know, well, it's a good move in terms of your target in spending. I could see that you don't have over expenditure. It's always less by 2%, 5% or so in your spending patterns in terms of what you have been allocated for. So I'm not sure, maybe at another level, I'm not sure whether there's another round that will come or another meeting that will deal with this matter, so that because I want to have a scrutiny on the financial side of the department, so that we avoid the cut and paste. I did not compare the notes of the previous financial year annual report vis-a-vis this one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Can I request the teacher to answer what he can be able to answer?
Yes,
but if there are other issues, we'll defer them to the next issue.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think all of us would agree with the questions that the honourable members asked now, and was also asked in the first round around monitoring at Batipili. I think we have done a number of reports, and the Public Service Commission has also done a number of reports. What the new initiative of the Minister is that the Batipili Learning Network should really be focusing on impact. So we're going to prepare the ground now in the one, because they're in November. But going forward, we really want the participating departments to speak to the issue of impact. And that will help us to also strengthen the monitoring evaluation systems around the implementation of the Batipili principles. But then maybe if I can just clarify on the particular table referred to, that table is talking to terminations. That's why there were no people with disability who were terminated during the period under review. So I think that's why we have the zeros. It's dealing with terminations, yeah. And then I think just maybe to comment on the issue of expenditure is that we monitor our expenditure performance very closely. We have a special budget committee within the department which sits on a regular basis at my level, but then within the branches, there's interaction between the finance section and the branches on a monthly basis. Because when you overexpend, you're not forgiven. But when you underexpend, you're heavily criticized. So we're obviously trying to manage our expenditure as close as we possibly can, which it's obviously not impossible because we've been succeeding in that. But I don't know if that helps the honourable member, but just to say that it's not really by chance that we've reached these figures. It's through close monitoring, particularly in the final quarter, where we really make sure that our available funding is being spent. And if there's areas of under expenditure, we might move it to certain projects which need to be implemented but are run short of funds and so on. So that's how we're able to manage the expenditure like that. So thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much to the Deputy Minister and the CC. Thanks for the session. I'm sure if the department was noting, there's quite a lot of follow-up that we definitely will engage with. You know, for example, I think also the issue of gender focal points, it came up very well. But you remember again that we talked about this master approach, the committee that deals with issues of gender is part of this master as well. And since the parliament is moving in that direction, there are a number of other areas that actually came together, including we still say local government. I'm sure we need to, like the deputy minister has called the department the correct way, which relates to in that way. So that approach is definitely going to help. We're picking up those matters, definitely in the coming cluster meeting. Those matters, you know, we'll send them to the department in advance for preparation and, you know, interaction in the cluster meeting. And thank you very much. We do have a bit of a time constraint. I'm going to request the Deputy Minister to close the session for the department, and then we'll take a quick break to just rest, and then before we have the presentation by the speaker.
Oh. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just make quick comments on two things. One is on the two song centres. I think we must understand that the responsibility of the department confines itself to establishing connectivity in the two song centres. And the actual operational management implementation responsibilities at the moment are residing with GCIS, and as per recommendation of the review of two song centres, we are being told it's not policy yet, but it has been recommended that two song centres will be handed over to COFTA. So we're still busy negotiating all of these things. The thing about CDWs, I think we've agreed that we must have a full session on it. It's quite important, and that we should have the opportunity to update the committee more fully on it. The Honourable Bikana, is it?
Bikana.
She made a very memorable comment today when she said that, on Bakupile, we're spreading the gospel, but the gospel is not succeeding. And I think her comment was supported by Honorable Manda Nleko when he said that the service delivery protests, if the service delivery improvement programs are in place, why are we having protests such as we do in Mpumalanga, Standerton, and Sakila? Now, why I say these comments are very important, Madam Chair, because they home in onto what has become now a very central concern about government as a whole on what is happening in the country today. If you look at what is happening in the country across three spheres of government, you will make the observation that the entire governmental system is being destabilized more by what is happening at local government than in any of the other two spheres. And a large measure of the protests that communities have been undertaking are focused at the municipalities and are dealing with service delivery challenges at the municipality level. So much so that yesterday the President convened a special meeting yesterday with all the executive mayors and mayors of every single municipality in the country. He had mobilized all of these mayors, mobilized all the CFOs, all the MECs, all the premiers, and every single cabinet minister to an indaba which was held like an imbizo yesterday in Kainisha. There's over about 1,500 people present. And the focal point of the conversation on this one is, what do we do to turn the situation around
as far as the municipalities are concerned. And we went into deliberations over 4 hours, this entire, what I would think would constitute the national leadership in government, in the country. And a great variety of issues were identified as the cause of what is happening in the country. But I'm sure you'll get the reports of this when they are produced. But let me just say, just for the benefit of the members of the committee, as you participate in the cluster, one of the major thrusts of the conversation is to look at the remodeling of local government in the country and to accelerate the pace at which you bring into being the single public service. So I want to just encourage the committee members, Madam Chair, that in our last, I think previous meeting in our strategic planning, we did say that we should interrogate this notion of service delivery and service delivery protests that are happening all over. And that's something that we must bring back into our program and try and have a full session on this, so that we understand that it's not just the question of simply the way we understand service delivery protests, because you will see that it has to do with much more than just the question of the changing of attitudes. In the case of Mpumalanga, Sakile, Standerton in particular, it has very little to do with the attitudes of public servants. It has more to do with corruption in the municipality. So it's a complicated business, and it requires quite a totality of effort. And I would think that this committee would do it to itself a great service to interrogate this thing a bit more closely, so that we understand this problem of our service delivery challenges, so that we can make a more effective contribution in the cluster. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Like I indicated, we're now starting to have a little bit of a time constraint. I'm allowing a only 10-minute break. I'm sure you'll bear with the time so that you can have enough time to look into the future presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, because we've got a time constraint as well, which we can look into extending a bit of time depending on how the input is made and what are the areas that actually are of concern. Okay, who's doing the presentation?
Okay.
can I request you to introduce yourself and then do the plan?
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, my name is Oda Manasseh. I'm the chairperson of CETA, and I am honorable deputy minister is also accompanying us. I am accompanied by the acting CEO, Ms. Ramabele Magona Mtinde, Moses Ntimonye, who is also a team of the acting CEO, the CFO, Andrew Pretorius. I think you must stand up as I introduce you. Moses Ntimonye, the CFO, Andrew Pretorius, the GM Communications, Anthea Summers, Government Relations Officer, whom you know very well, Tanya Abrams. We have a presentation for you which will deal with the strategic objectives, mainly what we've achieved as well as the challenges that we have on the issues that we did not achieve. We'll also deal with your key integrated service provision programs that you requested, the human capital as well as the financial performance, which will include the annual report, the governance structures at CETA, the Auditor General's report. Ramabele is going to be doing the presentation as the acting CEO. Thank you. Over to you, Ramabele.
Thank you. Morning and thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Chairperson of CETA colleagues. I'll be taking you through the presentation as highlighted in the agenda in terms of our strategic objectives and highlighting the achievements and those that we couldn't actually reach. We will also take you through the key integrated service provision programs that we are involved or engaged in throughout the government department. We will highlight some elements of human capital notions that are also part of the annual report, and we will take you through the financial performance of CETA for the year 2008-2009. I think it's important to mention before I even start with the presentation that the copies that you are having, there are some minor amendments that are made, but it will be on the presentation as well. As we get to those, I will highlight the new amendments that might not be in your copies. The first on the strategic objectives, I think it's important to mention that previously when we presented our strategic objective, we've given this strategy map. Out of the strategic imperatives of which the objectives are emanated from, this is, I could say, the gospel and the Bible that we are looking at as part of our three-year strategy. Every objective comes from the four things or the four perspectives as in the financial, customer, internal processes, and learning and growth. We presented this strategy map before, but I thought it's important that I bring it forth first before we continue. For the year 2008-2009, our strategic objectives, we set targets towards the objectives, which in that year we've managed to achieve 19 of them and not being able to achieve 8 of them. And the content in terms of why not achievement of the 8 is also in the annual report. But most of those is to say, importantly to note is to say, they are getting the highest priority at the moment in terms of making sure that the process for approval as well is concluded and exhausted so that finally we have something that we can work from. But the work is actually taking the course. Categories for the objectives or the targets. If you look at it on the financial perspective, we had 4 objectives for the year with 5 set targets. In the customer perspective, we had 10 objectives with 10 set targets. And in the internal processes, we had 4 objectives with 5 set targets. Learning and growth, we had 5 objectives with 7 set targets. The achievement as of those that really went through a rigorous process in terms of our internal audit, the AG performance information audit, and finally the verification in terms of an external party, just to ensure that the information that is provided in terms of the achievement is sound and is actually through the process that we could say, yes, comfortably, we sure we've delivered on this. It ranges from the first objective of grow revenue base, develop and implement an integrated, consistent, and robust planning cycle regime, develop detailed service catalog and service metrics, quality of service samples, develop and implement the service offerings to local government using shared services model. We improve quality of revenue and reduce cost to customers for agency transactions. The integrated financial management system as well, whatever we were contacted for the year, we were able to achieve. Develop and implement ICT planning governance framework, that we've done as well, and the elements of the e-government. The achievement continues on the next slide, which is the elements of the government-wide enterprise architecture that we were contacted on. Quality improvement, in this case, we're including the IT service management framework, which is operational and is actually working so well. We had the improvement of our business processes, which we've actually exhausted and concluded. We looked at the identified core and critical skills as part of our talent management strategy and within the critical workforce segments that we've identified for the organization to ensure that we capacitate and grow skills in the areas that are required. We focus on the values to ensure that the CETA organizational values that we've agreed upon, to ensure that they are actually instilled in every citizen in the way we do things in CETA. We also looked, which is a continuous program, looking at attracting and retaining critical skills and the people that we think and we believe that they meet the criteria of best performers. That is one item that we also believe that we will carry one year on year. We developed and implemented some elements of integrated talent management strategy, which is a continuous process as well. Attainment of employment equity in terms of the employment, the EE targets, and also the disability. What we were not able to achieve is the following, which is in the next slide, which is achieve working capital and cash flow targets. Develop, implement, and maintain competitive costing and sustainable pricing strategies. Convert all licensed software with a significant share to total government ownership to a single enterprise license. Signing of service level agreements are, okay, some were achieved, but the target in terms of what we set for the year, we couldn't achieve the 100% as agreed. The clean audit report, technically, we would say we've achieved that, but we looked at the way other matters that actually came in, which are new, but then we said maybe let's just take the route of saying not totally achieved when coming to that. Implement procurement-specific interventions to improve operational excellence and attainment of employment equity targets in relation to gender. That is one area that also we missed the target that we've set for the year, and it's also receiving the highest priority in this financial year. Part of the briefing to the portfolio committee, this is the slide we are set we've amended in terms of just giving the portfolio members, committee members, in terms of saying when we're referring to a program, what is that program all about? There are some amendments, and I'm sure that the copies can be circulated in terms of what each liner means. And for this one, I'm going to hand over to Moses Mutimune to just quickly take us through in terms of what those elements are and the discussions that comes around that. Over to you, Moses.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister. In the slide, it's slide 9, The number of projects and initiatives that we are working on. The first one listed there is what we call the Local Government Support Program, aptly known as the Municipal ICT Blueprint. This particular initiative is essentially designed with the purpose of trying to identify specific solutions gaps within local government with the purpose of proposing proof of concepting, implementing, and then trying to locate those particular solutions in the areas of need. In this particular instance, we are working with numerous municipalities across the country to help them implement specific solutions that will help them, particularly in the finance space, financial management space. The next initiative is the electronic health record. In the particular
Chairperson, if you can pardon me, the slides in the screen and the slides in our position is not the same. I wonder if that is a norm or it is by design, because secretly I'm not comfortable with that.
Can I find out, is that what?
Can that be provided then to members?
Okay. I think when we started, she did mention that the copies that we have are not the same with that. And what the member is actually raising now is that for us to be inconsistent with the presentation, there is a need to have that. So, meaning that you got it now, so we couldn't make copies as well. So, what we need to do then is just to ensure that you provide the correct copies to the members.
Shall I continue?
Yeah.
Thank you. The next initiative is the electronic health record. The objective of the initiative essentially to design and develop a solution for use by the Department of Health in establishing a single health record for all South Africans, particularly if a person was to get sick and move within municipalities, across geographies, or across provinces, that particular record needs to be consistent right across. We are helping the Department of Health in the particular instance. There are specific programs in the South African Police Service and the DOD that are totally outsourced to CETA that we are managing, that are numerous to list. So we just included that in a generic fashion like that. Then we've also done some work on the learner unit record information and tracking, which we call a LURIT, which is essentially a web-based system used to track the development of learners right through their formative schooling age and follow them through their schooling careers so that the education is then able to establish whether the outcomes of the education is essentially resulting in better skills for the economy or not. We did some work also together with the City of Johannesburg on what we call the Poverty Index, which is an element of the War on Poverty, where there is a way of validating that people who apply for indigent grants are essentially who they claim they are by validating between a number of databases within government. For instance, checking whether the person applying for one grant is not a recipient of another grant elsewhere, or if they are not working elsewhere, or if they are they are who they claim they are. So that particular piece of the work has been successfully done and piloted within the City of Johannesburg and with our help. We have deployed in the past elections, the call center for the IEC, both for the pre-registration and during the elections, and we are now hosting the presidential hotline in our call center. We continue to run the Youth Internship Development Program, which is essentially an initiative to allow graduates or diplomates to get entry into the ICT world of work by allowing them a year-long internship program within our environment. Continuing on the following slide, which is slide 10, there is work that we've done in what we call the government-wide enterprise architecture. This government-wide enterprise architecture is about the alignment of ICT plans and capabilities between ICT and departmental business plans and capabilities, so that when government departments plan on an ICT, there is standardization to enable for issues such as security and interoperability, and to make sure that systems that get deployed into government essentially follow a specific standardized and consistent manner. And we believe once we are done with this particular work, it will be much easier to start to see flowing out of it cost savings in the deployment of ICTs. We've deployed what we call a next generation network. This next generation network essentially started off as a data network, but it has got capability to integrate into it voice capability and video capability. In this way, we'll then be able to integrate into one set of network all those three functionalities. Members will be aware that right now, voice calls are on a specific network which is outside of the data network. Essentially, that is two separate calls, and that the voice, the video is also it's actually being leveraged off the voice network. So we're talking about how can we do convergence. So this next generation network enables government to have at least through one asset this particular capability. We are also monitoring this particular next generation network through our network operation center, which allows us to proactively manage service outages that will minimize the service delivery be affected, particularly in the ICT environment. We are helping both the Department of Public Service and Administration and National Treasury with the deployment of the Integrated Financial Management System. This is essentially a rewrite of all legacy applications like PESAL, BES, and Logis, using new technologies. We are also supporting the Department of Public Service and Administration on the Next Generation E-Government program. There is some work in that particular space in enabling the six key services that have been identified for automation e-enablement. And lastly, the continued work on the implementation of the free and open source software. And this is essentially about providing choice to the South African government and state in terms of software licensing regimes and the building of skills in the development of ICTs that can be consumed in the South African economy as well. Essentially, these are the key integrated service provision programs that we are working in the within the organization, which are highlighted high. There are others, but which may not necessarily be at the same level as this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Moses. To continue with the presentation, we now on the human capital element. And on that one, we just highlighted our achievement in terms of what is in the annual report, in terms of our achievement at the actual vis-a-vis the target, which is in the race sector. We were targeting 60%, which is gradual in 3 years towards the national targets. The achievement for 2008-2009 was 62.83, and in the gender, the target was 46%. We ran shortfall there. We were sitting at the actual of 45.87, and in the disability with the target for the year of 1%, we actually ended up at 1.34. Key human capital programs that we've ran in the previous financial year, I've already mentioned at the beginning that we looked as part of our talent management strategy, the within the critical workforce segments that we've identified within the organization, the core technical skills that we were going to concentrate on and ensure that we develop for the period of the year. Yes, and at the same time, in addition, we also prioritize as part of the strategic objective to look at the development of leadership and management skills to try and ensure that we capacitate for succession planning and for any other areas that we really could look into going forward, and especially from the leadership and management of the organization. We also spent a lot of time in ensuring that we run a lot of initiatives and programs towards our culture improvement, which in the previous financial year we've seen some serious growth in this area. Youth Intensive Program continues to be the center of or the vehicle at which CETA capacitate and ensure that at any given time we do have the excess skills that we could use in different areas. And that is a program that we believe that continuously we will have in priority areas that we've identified year on year. The next platform is the financial performance, but maybe before I hand over to Andre, let me run through the first slide just to highlight that within the organization, as governed by the board of directors, we do have subcommittees that looks at different areas, which is your human resources and which is REMCO, and we do have the audit and risk committee, we do have FinCap, and we also have the strategic subcommittee, which are all the subcommittees of board. In terms of governance, we highlighted audit and risk because as part of the annual report, that's actually where most of the work is actually highlighted in the annual report. And also we do have what, in our view, is an internal audit division that which is independent and looks at a lot of areas that are highlighted that may need to be investigation to take place. We also have an anti-fraud hotline, which is also full-time working, and it's all issues that are reported are investigated, and where necessary, appropriate action is being taken. And maybe I'll hand over to Andre to take us through the financial performance in detail.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honourable members. I'm going to take you through the financial part of this presentation. We start with just giving a brief view of the audit report. In the previous year, we had an unqualified audit report with emphasis of matters. During the current year, we've got an unqualified report with no emphasis matters reported. However, as you'll see in the next slide, we've got some other matters that have been reported. Other matters that support an audit report, these specific issues, two issues related to non-compliance with PFMA. The first issue relates to a contract management system that's not in place, and a specific weakness that we're addressing. The way that we address that is by the upgrade from version 11 to 12 of our current ERP system. We're also implementing, as part of that upgrade, a contract management module. The second issue that's been highlighted is where we need to get approval from National Trade to retain our surpluses. We have rectified that, and we have officially wrote a letter to get approval to retain the surpluses. The next issue is that's been important in terms of the non-compliance of the CETA Act. Historically, we've got a challenge. We always have a challenge in terms of service legal agreements that's not signed. We've implemented various initiatives, and we're following it up and tracking the service legal agreements to ensure that we improve on that in the current year. Then also reported on the vacant prescribed directors' positions, specifically managing director and legal representative on the board. That is being taken care of at the right levels, and it is being addressed at the moment. Then the auditor general also they include a table in their audit report that gives surface snapshot of key governance responsibilities and problems that's experienced within the organisation in that regard. The first one that they highlight is that there was a delay in the audit. The reasons being that during the year we've implemented improved processes and controls around projects. It also resulted in a vast or much more projects registered, and with that we needed a lot of work to ensure that we, in terms of the audit, to prepare for audit and also to address auditors' concerns. That has also resulted in some material audit adjustments to the annual financial statements, which was mainly in that environment. Then they've also reported on internal control weaknesses, which is various internal control weaknesses, many of those within the project management environment as well. Then the non-compliance with legislation, as they we've also reported separately above, they've basically referred to those. Then they've also reported on the current information system that's not supportive, and specifically not supportive to producing the financial information that we need, and in terms of producing accurate financial statements. We're addressing that currently by upgrading our current ERP system to ensure that it's provide more support. That has led to a lot of manual interventions, and I think that that's a concern. Then they've also reported that there's unresolved prior audit findings. Many of these unresolved prior audit findings is actually covered and addressed by the upgrade of the new system, which also provides for much more control and hopefully going forward we'll resolve many of those. We have also initiated quite a number of initiatives within the organization to make sure that all the findings are addressed by the whole of the CETA, and that everybody in CETA does take it very seriously. Then they've just highlighted the indications where they've started in previous years and the current years, where the Auditor General, it's a practice within the audit report to give feedback of those and to report on the progress of those. Then, before I get to the summary of the statement of financial performance, financial position, and the cash flow statement, I've decided just to highlight, and this is a slide that I've added that wasn't in the presentation in front of you, just so that you don't see the figures called, just to give summary of the performance. Our revenue increased by 10%, that's the one point. The second point, also together with that, we did lower our tariffs and revised or looked at our tariffs in the mainframe environment because we know that our customers, complaints from some of our customers relating to that. So that has resulted in 225 million rand less revenue than we budgeted in specifically relating to the mainframe environment. Secondly, in the second instance, it's very important to note that we had a number of initiatives during the year to ensure that we pay our suppliers more promptly. We've actually made substantial progress in this regard. And, so from a working capital point of view, we are paying our suppliers much more promptly. However, we're still sitting with fairly the same debtors collection periods than in the previous year, which means that we do still have challenges in terms of debt collection. Now, in terms of the revenue and the working capital that I've just discussed, we also the cash that we generate from our operations, that was 87 million, was substantially less than the 163 million rand that we budgeted to, that is a target we set for ourselves. That has impacted on our capital expenditure program. However, I also want to mention that to some extent, or not to some extent, we have also implemented specific controls around our capital expenditure program to make sure that when we do spend money on capital, that we do get assurance that we do spend our money in line with our strategic plan. If we don't spend it on capital expenditure, that doesn't support our strategic plan. So that's also part of one of our initiatives. Then, you know, if I look at the whole set of financial statements, and I've got to ask myself the question, is the company, from a financial point of view, is the company financially structurally sound? If you look at the two main or the key ratios that would provide some indication, is one is the solvency ratio, which was calculated 2.4121. The benchmark for that is 2:1. So we've done quite well there. The second one is the liquidity ratio that was calculated 1.9821. These days, if you approach a bank for a loan and you go, you've got a liquidity ratio of about 1.5:1, the bank is quite comfortable to grant you a loan. So, but in terms of those ratios, in looking at the state of the situation, we came to the conclusion that the company is healthy and it is the financial structure of the company is sound. Just in terms of further financial performance, just some highlights. The revenue growth, we did achieve the revenue growth of 10%. We have significantly reduced our supply payment periods. Then our solvency and liquidity ratio that I just discussed, that indicates the company is financially healthy and structurally sound. Areas for improvement, we have to still focus on our debtors days, and of course, to give that whole working capital management, we need to make sure that that our cash generated can be improved. Then we get to the actual, this is just summary information and just to highlight certain information. The first one is to highlight certain information in the statement of financial performance. Our revenue was 3.976 billion. Our cost of sales 3.206 billion, which left us with a gross surplus of 770 million. The gross surplus, as we indicate, we've reduced sales in our mainframe environment, which also resulted in a decrease in our gross surplus percentage from 25% to 90% in the current year. Then our operating expenses has increased from 607 million. To 7 and 8 million. The reasons for that you'll come to later. And just the results from our operating activities, then we generate an operating surplus of 112 million. The surplus before tax, off tax, that figure is of course after our net finance income. Was 216 million, and we sat with after tax, we had a surplus of 153.7 million. On our operating expenditure, the percentage has increased from 16.8% to 17.8%. We were expecting a higher review, however, during the year we did decide to reduce some of our tariffs, and that had an impact on that percentage, and of course also the increase in the operating expenditure. Our surplus after tax, that resulted in a surplus after tax percentage of 3.87%. Just in terms of a summary of our financial statement of financial position, on the assets, the non-current assets has increased to 682 million. Current actions was 1.919 billion. And our total assets base at the moment is 2.6 billion. Then on the, that's also, if you look at our net assets, in other words, where our assets exceed our liabilities, our net assets is at the moment 1.519 billion. Non-current liabilities has increased very slightly to 112.8 million. And then the current liabilities has actually decreased slightly from 968.6 billion. That left us with a solvency ratio of 2.41 to 1 and a liquidity ratio of 1.98 to 1. Cash flow, a brief cash flow statement. The cash flow statement to me is a very important statement. The reason being, at the end of the day, you need money to pay for whatever you need to pay. You can have very good profits, but if you don't have the cash, it's not going to translate into a healthy business as well. As noted before, our cash flow from operating activities was 87.1 million. What we have done is we've been adapting to our surpluses to reinvest into our companies in the form of capital expenditure. The cash that has flowed with regard to that is was 198.4 million. Cash flow from finance activities, which basically reflects the interest that we paid on our denial loan. That's an annual payment. That's 5.2 million. That's actually the payment from our denial loan, which left us with a decrease in cash for the year of 116.5 million. If you then add the balance of the previous year, we get to cash and cash equivalents at the end of the year of 984.7 million. Then, just in terms of the, we've decided to put in a slide on the trade and other receivables, mainly because we know members are normally very interested in. Our trade and trade receivables, in terms of debtors' books, have increased from 788 million to 871 million, which is a substantial increase. Other receivables has increased slightly, and our total trade and other receivables was 881.88.1 million. The point of note, which is more important to focus on most probably, is the trade receivables. We have given a breakdown of the trade receivables in terms of the current between 0 and 30 days, 31 and 320 days. 121 to 365 days and amounts that due for over a year. Just the one comment, the 17.8 million, that's in practice, that's mainly due to the 225 million rent. We reduced our tariffs, the deduction was basically backdated, and that resulted in a number of credit notes issued to our customers, and that's why in the column 121 to 365 days, we've actually got an amount that's in negative. So, but the reason being that's based on the reduction in mainframe tariff. This is just the trends in revenue from year to year that we've put a slide. As you could just see that consistently year to year, we've been growing our revenue to the current year of 3.977 billion. Just in terms of revenue growth, we have achieved a budget revenue of 10%. Here we've grown quite a bit in labor revenue for 8%. Network and internet revenue has increased by 20%. Software licenses and maintenance, that has increased by 27%. And as a result of the higher focus on projects and to ensure that our projects are registered, the revenue from the project management module has increased substantially. Then we have small sundry revenue, which has also increased to just over 100%. the reduction, we did in which areas was the reduction in revenue? Under the computer equipment and maintenance, there was a reduction, and very specifically under the mainframe environment, due to the lower tariffs, we had a reduction of revenue of around about 10%. This is just the cost of sales, a summary of the cost of sales. You also notice that there was a steady increase in the cost of sales. There was also...
sorry for interrupting. I just want to evaluate how much time to still need.
I'll make it very quickly, nearly at the end. Can I have 3 minutes? Okay. Then the reason for the cost of sales increases, depreciation, and that's why we've tightened up the control over our capital expenses, direct labor. It's mainly due to demand from the department. Service delivery overheads, included in that figure is also our agency transactions, and due to the increase in those agency transactions, we also had an increase in our service delivery overheads. Then on the capital expenditure, you'll see that we've contained our capital expenditure to 199 million, and we've also tightened the controls around that. Then in areas of spending on capital expenditure, we spent mainly on buildings. That's the biggest areas of spending: building 20 million, computer equipment 10 million, office and furniture 33 million, and tangible assets, which is really our software, of 36 million. Gross surplus, as mentioned before, we've had a reduction in gross surplus, and if you go to the next slide, you'll see that the reduction in gross surplus is mainly due to the mix of our products. We have an increase in agent transactions. We include the software on the offer agreement, which really we don't earn a lot of margin on it, and also reduce tariffs in the mainframe environment. Operating expenditure, I've explained previously already, we have had an increase, and if you get to the next slide, you see that the main reasons, operating leases, the leases for our buildings has gone up, foreign exchange loss, that relates to the valuation of our FEC contracts, which is really not cash that is flowing, but it's an accounting loss, impairment on trade, that's an increase. The amount in big factors increased from the previous year. Impairment on trade receivables, we have has increased, and also our audit fees has increased. Just for one note on the audit fees, the pre-audit fees are supposed to be determined in terms of the amount, the time sheets, the actual work that you do during the year, that the auditors do. During the previous year, we actually make a compromise to ensure that we brought the audit fees to recognize the cost in line with accounting standards. So the increase in audit fees is not a real increase. A biggest part of that is an accounting increase. And that's just a reflect of the net surplus that is reduced. And if you get to the sales low slide, the low net surplus is mainly as a result of the low gross surplus and also an increase in operating expenditure. Thank you, Chairperson and members.
Thank you, Chairperson. That brings us to the end of the presentation.
Deputy Minister, I think I really need to raise something before we can take questions or discussion. You know, once here we have to be guided. Getting back to our agenda here, we made a request briefing by the State Information Technology Agency on its annual report for 2008-2009 on the provision of integrated computer technology services to government departments. So it's a specific request. In fact, when Honorable Mbilu was raising the issue of the inconsistencies between what we have and the presentation, I really didn't want to interrupt because I just thought maybe from the presentation some other thing will be captured. But still, Deputy Minister, it's very much unfair to, you know, we request information on time as members so that we prepare ourselves for these committees, the information that we don't get. We actually could not get information as late as yesterday afternoon, but it's worse now. Other information is just provided this same way. The perception out there is that members of parliament don't read. That's what people say about us. Members of parliament don't read, they're ignorant, and so on and so on. And the fact of the matter is that now, how do we read if some of the information we get it that late, yesterday afternoon? Where's now the information that requested, which means that we didn't find it? I don't know. I need to be guided by the committee. Do we want to proceed, or should we sort of request that it be done in a way that can make us have the proper intelligence? Because surely I really wanted to compromise, but the way it is worse. So I'm working with a collective. I also have some responsibilities in terms of making this parliament effective. But because I'm within a collective, can I be guided by other members? What do we do?
Chairperson, I tend to concur with what you've just said, because even the type of questions we were going to ask in terms of what has been presented to us is really not acceptable. It also doesn't give us direction in terms of if we have to play our own oversight role, what exactly are we expected to do out of such a report. For that matter, there are other issues we wanted to question about. And the way they're giving their financial report as well, it's fine, the figures are there, but it's more for an office operational situation. It's not practical in terms of what we need to understand of what they have done and not done. Especially if you look at the fact that we know for a fact that, for example, we have issues around the processes they follow in terms of their supply chain, in terms of companies that are doing business with government. There's nothing being said about that, and yet they're providing a service somewhere. We need to get issues coming out in terms of the information technology systems that are in place, and how are they being integrated with government? Where are they? How far are they? So all those issues are not part of this report, and they are not even relevant if we are to actually ask our questions to this report. I would say another day should be scheduled for such a report that is more appropriate and more representative of what we should be hearing. I'm also not accepting this. Thank you.
I think you'll be the Honourable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I agree, but I'd also like to request the CETA to supply us with the contact details of the customers that are illustrated on page 9, because I think that we must also investigate that. So all those customers, for instance, SAPS, Health, whoever is on page 9 that they've detailed as their customers, I'd like to have contact details of the people that they deal with. Because the emphasis of today's report was on the surplus in like a company and not on service delivery of a state entity. And surplus is a bad thing in government. I need to remind the seat of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Without wasting much time, I would want to concur and align myself to the previous speakers that surely this document can be improved, because we are talking about the public. So that even if you see my problem, you've got your targets. You know, I don't know from which angle do you benchmark that. If you look at page 1 or page 2 of your document, the achieved 19, you know, and not achieved, that premise is, to me, the end is not correct, because you must say, this is my target, this is what I've achieved, this is the output. Well, the setback is there, so that also we can measure that with the financial implication of the 19 achieved. So I'm saying, Chairperson, surely they need to improve a little bit. There's room for improvement on this, but I support your view, and also the reservations that I have in terms of what should be done. Also, Chairperson, maybe my last point. You see, this must speak directly to this document. Well, this is an executive. I always say that it's an executive extracted from this, so that it makes our work easier in reading this document. But if you look at this, it's too little. From what, or rather, I would, if it was my way, I was going to say let's concentrate here and leave the executive so that we have a broader picture from program by program. But as you said, time is against us. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I do have a little bit of a difficulty, even if you want to measure their milestones in terms of what they've done in this main document. It's not coming very clear, as if government is not confident on what it has done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Vika. I'll take that's the last one. Honourable Lua, you'll pardon me.
I'm
not familiar with.
Thank you, Chair. May I also ask, in terms of the report of the Auditor General on page 75 and 76, may I ask for consideration as far as the investigations is concerned? We have various investigations reported, and in some cases it's stated to the relevant ministers, and in other cases it's stated to the minister, to the relating ministers, to the minister in relation, and in some cases there's ministers been named. May I ask that these investigations also be made available for this committee? It is on page 75 and 76, and also there are other investigations rooted to SCCU, also come with an indication as far as the time frame or conclusion of that investigation is concerned.
I think in the light of the inputs, can I humbly request the minister who is responsible for the CETA and the representatives of the CETA to really try to take us a bit serious moving forward. And I don't think we really have to proceed, then we'll adjourn here. Thank you.
Thank you.